Hey, when you hear that music, you know that you're listening to an edition of Spiritual Perspectives. Spiritual Perspectives happens every time we've got a fifth Monday and sometimes when there's special events. So my name is Scout Bartlett. I'll be your host, and we'll be talking this morning with a fascinating guest. I know most of us are not thinking of Chicago, USA as necessarily the home of the most spiritual profound things other than perhaps pizza. But this morning we have a guest who is based in Chicago. He had experiences as early in life as being like 5 or 6 years old when his mom had said to him something like, if I ever got in real trouble, I could reach out to God and God would help me. And then he says, not long after that, I found myself in midair falling backwards. From that motion, he came out of school with graphic arts and actually developed into promotion, manufacturing, management, all that normal world stuff, all the way up to getting himself an MBA along the way just because he wanted to and he needed that background and that skill set. But as he moved forward, even in the, quote, real world, close quote, of an MBA, looking back on it, he could see that the start of his real work has always been about patience, perseverance, intelligence, focus, problem solving, ethics, progress, attention to detail, and learning to combine wisdom, economy, and brotherly love. So from that business world, he moved forward and found himself doing a full-time practice of healing and now even teaching about spiritual things, spirituality, and spiritual healing. Everybody, I would like to introduce you to Dave. His last name is spelled H-O-H-L-E, but it's pronounced appropriately enough, Holy. Everybody, this is Dave Holy. Dave, this is everybody.
Hey, thanks a lot, Scout.
This is fun. It's great to have you here. It's sort of funny that as we air this program, you just sort of were out here in the Bay Area a little bit, and now you're headed on up into Canada. A very, very busy schedule. How much time do you spend at home these days?
That's a good point, Scott. It takes me almost every weekend I'm gone right now lecturing, and sometimes the whole week. Like, I have to spend a week in England here during June.
And is that actually phrased "have to"?
It's a beautiful opportunity, actually. Someone asked me, or someone introduced me once as an international speaker, and I said, well, I did speak once in Winnipeg, so I guess that makes me an international speaker.
Yeah, that counts.
But now it's true. Now I'm actually traveling more, and I have been very busy this spring. That is true. The thing is, though, this concept of time, which touches us all, and it, like for instance, you and I set this up, and we set a date, and we set a time to meet, and now we're meeting. So time touches everything, really, and we're used to using it as a tool. And as a tool, it's a useful tool. It's very consistent, and you can kind of count on it, and you can count the days and count the minutes and all of that. But time also has a tendency to try to get into the driver's seat a little bit and sort of tell us what we can and can't do. And that's where I think a spiritual perspective is helpful, because time really, at the beginning and at the end, time is only a mortal measurement.
And we can notice right away, because I know you've got a lecture, time is not a factor in your life, but we can notice right away that time is highly elastic. I can remember how long 5 minutes was when I was sitting in grade school waiting for that clock to tick. But I can also think how short 5 minutes is if that's the only amount of time you have with a loved one.
That is a beautiful way to describe that. It is elastic. And you've heard the phrase, time work expands to fill the time available.
Oh, yeah.
Well, I've noticed that time also expands to enable what is required of it. And I'll bet many of your listeners have had the experience of having something to do, knowing they can't actually get it done because there isn't enough time, and then somehow getting settled and doing it and having it accomplished on time. And I've noticed that. I used to do a lot of production, manufacturing-type work that involved hard deadlines. I think I wrote 10,000 production schedules while I was still in my 20s. And so I dealt with a lot of this. And what I've noticed over the years is that time is not the hard and fast thing that we think it is. Even time management experts these days are beginning to recognize what you just said, which is that not all minutes are created equal. Some minutes are bigger than other minutes. And in terms of chronology, they're not. They're all equal. But in terms of substance, spiritual substance, they're different. Minutes are different. And so that's kind of where I came out of my professional experience has led me to see, and I've had a bunch of experiences that have confirmed this for me, that time really isn't a factor. A factor is a contributor. It's something that actually contributes. Time is a measurement. It is not a contributor. And we give it too much power, really, if we allow it to mess up our lives and mess up our health and get us all nervous and so forth. And there are ways to enable us to avoid that, you know. And that's kind of what my lecture is about.
I noticed that and you and I so deeply agree on so many things, Dave. This first time we've had a chance to chat, but, you know, I knew I was going to talk to you, so I've been looking you up. One of the pieces is that when we get into a beyond physical or metaphysical world, that we're out beyond time and space. And so frequently I have that experience even working with clients where I'm looking at something with them. And if it's a traumatic experience or an experience that's stuck somehow, it's as real now as it was 2 years ago, 5 years ago, or 25 years ago when it happened. So in a world of healing, there's definitely a place where we have to recognize that it's not a, gee, that happened 6 months ago or a year ago, 10 years ago, you should be over it now. It's all got to do with our internal reality and where we're lined up. I'm going to toss that one in your lap and see where you want to go with that.
Well, that's completely beautiful, Scott, because that's exactly right. That's another one of those sort of little wives' tales that time heals all wounds.
Yeah.
And time doesn't heal. You just mentioned it. People carry these, like someone might have been betrayed or something, and they carry that resentment for a long time. I had breakfast yesterday with an old friend of mine. And he married this young woman right out of college, and it wasn't an intelligent marriage. And it was, he said, we were both young, there were mistakes made, and he said, but you know what? I don't carry that at all, any resentment at all, because it takes energy to carry that kind of resentment, and it's not
well
a good energy.
Well said.
And so, but what is it that actually relieves us of that? Of that resentment or that sense of betrayal or that sense of injury, whether it's physical or emotional, it's a change of thought. Thought has to change. There can be an adjustment. I know a guy, a friend of mine, close friend of mine, who was in a relationship and this girl ended the relationship and it was totally devastating to him. And he went to this park for, I think it was about 2 hours. And he just kind of thought about God. He thought about God as love and how much God loved him in profound ways, in kind of eternal ways. And in 2 hours, he walked away from that, and there was no issue at all there. There was a guy that called me up not long ago from out on the West Coast, actually. And he'd had similar kind of thing. A girl broke up with him, which kind of ruined his whole life, his whole frame of reference. And we talked, might have been 15 minutes. And then we prayed about it to understand his completeness, you know, his own spiritual completeness. You know, that there's a line from a movie that says, "You complete me."
Mm-hmm.
And that's another one of those odd things. Because no other person can really make you complete. You are complete.
Right.
Each one of us is. Anyway, this guy called me the next morning. He said, "It's over. You can close the book on that. That whole sense of disruption is over." So it's a shift of thought. It's not time.
So that's a perfect place to lead in, Dave. Because I know that you've shared a story, and I'd love for us to talk about it here. In one of those places where I've noticed that that there are those moments in my life where even though I've logged enough chronology to label me an adult, sometimes my brain is still about as bright as a teenager. No offense, but you took off on a bit of a motorcycle ride from Florida heading back toward home without appropriate gear, and you slept frozen for a night and woke up with a cold. Now, I think everybody that lives in a real world knows how much time it takes for a body to process out a virus, all those physical beliefs, and how much time it takes to process out a virus before your body gets over a cold. So let me just toss that to you, and you could start at the beginning with you were visiting friends in Florida, and you were going to take this beautiful bike ride to ride your way back home again.
That's so interesting. You have done your research, Scott. Yeah,
that person you thought was stalking you this last few weeks, that was me.
Now, what happened was a friend of mine was flying a private airplane to Florida, and he told me that I could ride down there with him, and so I did. But he said, you can only take 40 pounds worth of stuff with you. Uh-huh. So I very carefully measured that out, and I was on the airplane with a sleeping bag and a few other things that I thought I would need. And when I came back from Florida on a motorcycle, I actually bought a motorcycle, and I was riding back. I lived in Boston at the time, and I was coming up through the Blue Ridge Mountains in April, and it was, you know, beautiful, really beautiful ride and everything. I don't know if you've ever been on that, they call it the Blue Ridge Parkway, but it's the most beautiful road. A lot of those southeastern roads are really beautiful. Mm-hmm. Any rate, I pulled into this campground, and I got into a tent, and that night it got cold, and I realized that I didn't really have the right stuff with me because I had come so light. And I put on all the clothes I had, and I got into this tent and into this sleeping bag, and there was frost everywhere. There was frost on my bike. It was cold. And I thought I was going to wake up like that guy they found in the Alps, you know, all frozen solid and everything.
10,000 years from now, they would be researching.
That's right. That would be me. But the night before, I always carry with me a book. It was written by a woman named Mary Baker Eddy. She wrote it over 100 years ago, maybe 150 years ago. It's called Science and Health with Key to the Scriptures. And I carry a copy with me, and I had one in my stuff there. So among my 40 pounds of gear, I had this book. And it was all kind of crinkled up and everything because it had been wet. I've used it on motorcycle trips before. But I read just one thing from there that seemed kind of interesting to me, which was this. I think I can quote it just without even looking it up. It said, if your patient believes in taking cold, meaning catching a cold, mentally convince him that matter cannot take cold and that mind governs this liability. Okay.
Let me just repeat that. If your patient believes in taking cold, mentally convince him that matter cannot take cold and that thought governs this liability. There's some words in there you're going to have to define for us as you spell this out.
Okay. Well, first of all, if your patient, and I thought, well, I'm the patient in this case.
Yep.
I am my own patient.
Yep.
If your patient believes in taking cold, meaning catching a cold, if he believes that he can get a cold, he can, you know, sleep under an open window and get a cold, or sleep in a freezing cold tent and get a cold, if he believes that, then you must mentally convince him that matter, meaning the body, the physical body by itself, can't do that. The physical body can't do anything. Mind or thought has to do it, has to accept it. So I got up in the morning, and I couldn't swallow, and I had this cold, and I was kind of kicking myself for being such an idiot and getting myself in that situation. But you know what? I thought, okay, I'm going to mentally convince the patient, and that's me. And I thought, well, what do I have to do to be convinced? And I thought, well, I really have to believe it. I you can't just give me words. I actually have to believe this somehow to be convinced. And then I thought of this, and you talk about defining terms. I'm going to define a term that science and health, Mary Baker Eddy's Science and Health, defines. She defines mortal mind versus divine mind. So divine mind would be that perfect consciousness, that divine consciousness of the one God, the all-knowing God, who wouldn't know anything about disease anyway, or sickness, or illness, or virus, or anything like that.
Might know
the
about it, but wouldn't believe in it.
Yeah, but the mortal mind would believe in it.
Uh-huh.
The mortal mind would conceive of it, and it would put a lot of stock in it, and it would be afraid of it,
yep,
and it would accept it.
Now I know I'm sick. I'm going to be sick for several days. It's going to do this.
Right.
It's going to do that. It's all about time.
It's about time. And by the way, just as an aside, chronic disease has to do with time. It's disease that occurs over time. Well, if we're going to accept the mortal premise, you've slept, you didn't have the right stuff, you're cold, you caught cold, now you can't swallow, and now, frankly, you can't even ride north because every time you blow your nose, you have to take a helmet off. So
I hadn't even thought about that, but yeah, that's going to slow you down.
So I decided what I was going to do. I thought, you know, I got 1,500 miles, and I'm going to ride, and I'm going to convince the patient. I'm going to do nothing but that. And I began to think this thing through a little bit, and I thought, well, divine mind wouldn't know anything about this. Mortal mind knows it, and mortal mind would want me to think it and believe it. It would want that all day long. And I thought, you know what? Eventually I reasoned, I kind of continued to reason this out, and eventually I reasoned that for this to be true, I would have had to be separated briefly from God. I would have had to be separated from the divine mind, maybe overnight, maybe for a few hours, maybe just during a freezing cold of the night. I would have had to been separated, and I realized that is impossible. You cannot be separated from the mind that made us. Can't be separated from the divine mind that we reflect with life. And suddenly I realized, you know what? I'm convinced of that. That piece I'm convinced.
So that piece you had.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And suddenly I realized I'm also free of that cold. And so in the course of about an hour, I would say, of reasoning, I was riding north. I was just riding along the Blue Ridge Parkway, thinking and reasoning. And about an hour into this, I realized, you know what? You're free. You're free physically. And then I didn't just like declare victory. I kind of assured myself over and over and over again of my freedom and of my wholeness as an individual, as an idea of God. As not a mortal concept, but a divine idea. And about mid-afternoon, I rolled off of that Blue Ridge Parkway, came down into one of those little towns, and I bought a sleeping bag, a beautiful, wonderful sleeping bag, and I sent my other one home. And then I camped and rode the rest of the way with no, I think it was 5 days it took me to get home, and it was just no further incident. So that's kind of the story of that, since you asked. But it does come from this idea that life really is spiritual. Life, we reflect it humanly, but we're not essentially mortals. We are essentially spiritual ideas.
So at that essence level, and so let me toss this one to you, Dave, because I live in this world, spiritual world, as well as a physical world, and I've noticed places along the way in my life, there's some stories I tell about when I had a huge realization one day that I am a spiritual being no matter where I am and no matter what I'm doing, while sitting in a padded orange, well, I won't call it a cell, we'll say cube, but there's sometimes I notice that we can get lost into the idea that it's sort of like, sorry for my languaging here, but it's sort of like God spat us out, and then we screwed it up, And now our job is on our own to find our way back to that bright light, but that we've got to figure it out on our own. Once we got cast, that was it. Now we've got to rebuild the system to find our way back to being a spiritual creature. And I don't think that's the model you're working from at all.
Yeah, that's a very beautifully worded concept. And I think it's probably fairly commonly believed.
Yeah.
But the way through that, I think, is to go right. The Bible says, "Declare the end from the beginning." Go right to the start, and say, "Hold it, God made man in His own image and likeness." The first chapter of Genesis describes that,
mm-hmm.
and God maintains man. God maintains His own image and likeness. And so if there's a way that I have wandered off the path, which is possible, there the way back is through the divine mind, listening to, like, one of the questions that we probably will talk about a little bit today is prayer. What is prayer really?
And yes, please.
it's kind of one way to think about it is kind of yielding to the divine rather than accepting the inevitability of this mortal thing, whatever it is. And, you know, there are people that are dealing with things that seem inevitable, like life-threatening things that don't seem like there's any chance of coming through it.
Right.
But look at what Jesus did, for instance. He showed up at Lazarus' tomb 4 days late, basically, okay? According to time, he showed up late. And yet, he said, no. Roll that stone away. Get that stone out of the way. And let this guy come forward. And he called him forward. Lazarus, come forth. And out walked his friend. Lazarus, his friend. So time or the inevitability of these mortal situations can be challenged. And I think we're wise to just kind of challenge it. And we may be kind of few, like most of the world doesn't think in the terms that you're thinking in and the questions that you're asking, but they could. And the benefits of it, the upside of it, is unlimited. We can be completely spiritual beings here. You've heard that phrase. I'm sure you've heard that phrase.
Mm-hmm.
We are spiritual beings here. And one of the points that is made in Science and Health, that book I've been mentioning, is that the Christ, this concept of the Christ, is divinity actually reaching humanity. This, and it's not just one guy, Jesus, that did this. It's this concept of the Christ that he embodied so perfectly and so beautifully. But it's an eternal concept. It's divinity reaching humanity. And one of the probably the most quoted phrases from this book, Science and Health, is, "Divine love always has met and always will meet every human need." But it's the divine love, it's not human love, it's divine love that's actually meeting the human need, whatever that is.
I'm going to jump backwards. Just I'm soaking this in, and there's so many pieces I want to touch back into, but I'm going to jump back a bit, Dave. You were talking about prayer and what it is. I love the phrase you said, that prayer is sort of yielding to God. So let me get downright personal here. Your own process, when you consider yourself either in or having reached a state of prayer for yourself, not anybody else's definition, when you sense, realize, recognize, know, whatever's the appropriate verb here, that you've hit that state of prayer, talk to me about that for you. How do you know when you hit it?
Okay. First of all, you kind of described it in a very beautiful way there. When you acknowledge, accept, kind of like recognize, it's kind of a recognition. There was a situation that came up once in my life. A lot of things come up fast. They're emergencies, and you have to deal with them right now.
Oh yeah.
And it's almost better that way, actually, because you don't have much time to think. You just have to do. You have to think quickly. And I had a situation once. I was actually working in a steel mill, It was an iron foundry, actually. It was called Iowa Steel and Iron Works. And there was a chain that broke. It didn't actually snap, but it broke loose and flew. There was a lot of pressure on it, and this chain flew. And it was probably 100 pounds of chain, maybe 150 pounds of chain, flying, you know, at maybe, you know, 100 miles an hour.
Yeah.
And it hit this young man in the chest and knocked him backwards. Now, in my experience, and I didn't work there very long, but even in my experience, there were guys that got killed in there. It was a dangerous place.
Yes.
And in this situation, I went to go to get to him. But by the time I got there, there were probably three or four other guys around him. And suddenly I realized, this guy does not need another steel worker. He needs someone who's going to think. Someone who's going to think. And that may be me. And I picked up his glasses out of the dirt, and I turned away from the situation, and I kind of reached out to God. And the thought came to me, I remember it like it was yesterday. The thought came to me, you have to do the best thinking you've ever done in your life, and you have to do it right now.
Mm-hmm.
And I began to pray the Lord's Prayer, Our Father, which art in heaven. I was like a kid. I was a kid. I was 22 years old.
Yeah.
Our Father, which art in heaven. I got to the point where it's on earth as it is in heaven, and I couldn't remember the next line, and I panicked. I couldn't remember. I couldn't even remember the Lord's Prayer.
Mm-hmm.
And then that thought came to me, what do you know? And I thought, well, on earth as it is in heaven. And I thought, there's your answer. That's the whole answer. Now, you ask me, how do I know that I've gotten there? It flooded over me like it was physical. I felt I had reached into the divine for something I had to have, and it was there. And I received the answer I needed, and I knew he was fine. I knew that on earth as it is in heaven, because if that's true, then there is no accident here. And I turned around, and he popped up. He just stood right up, and I handed him his glasses, and people dispersed, and we all went back to work. And so that was kind of one instance where I felt, give me another real quick one, actually.
Yeah, because it's not like God's always going to provide you a broken chain and a steel mill in order to motivate.
You know what? I think when those things come up, I think I think we got to recognize that it wouldn't be God that would do that.
Right.
A lot of people say, well, thanks, God is testing me and that kind of thing.
Right.
I don't really think it's that. I think it's like, I'm going to face this, and I'm going to deal with it. It's not coming to me from God. If it was coming to me from God, I'd accept it.
Yes.
You know what I mean? It's a challenge to order. It's a challenge to principle, really. Principle operates without accident. Principle operates harmoniously. And when there's a challenge to that, then as an agent, you might say, of divine mind, you're gonna challenge it back. And that's kind of what I did in that instance. And in that little instance, I just said, on earth as it is in heaven. Well, how is it in heaven? Jesus walks all through the New Testament saying, well, you know, the kingdom of heaven is like this. Look at this flower. The kingdom of heaven is like this. It's like these two guys that went and took a long trip. He described it in real terms, practical terms. And I might say the kingdom of heaven is like a guy getting hit in the chest with a bunch of chain and not being harmed.
Sweet. So for you in prayer, you have a real, call it kinesthetic or practical experience of feeling yourself releasing your normal perspective and being able to step into that broader, well, just to borrow a pun, spiritual perspective. And I'm going to put a hold button on it right there, because that gives me, and for once, I'm going to have a decent segue. I want to remind everybody that you are listening to Spiritual Perspectives. Let us just do a quick station ID, and we'll be right back.
Just for San Francisco.
Hey, you're listening to the Spiritual Perspective Show. My name is Scout, like Pathfinder, Bartlett, like Pears. I'll be your host, and our show is originating from KEST 1450 AM in San Francisco. You'll be able to find this program if you want to rehear it later. You'll be able to find it archived up on the website ifidknownthen.com, and you can find additional Spiritual Perspective programs there that you can listen to. Our guest today is Dave Hohle. That's spelled H-O-H-L-E, and because it's a somewhat unique name, you can actually find his own website and all of his information, including clips from the various talks that he's done and places that he'll be, on the website www.davehohle.com, as well as you can find him in the christianscience.com under lecturers. We're returning. So Dave, we're back. We were just talking about prayer. And that when you feel that you're, our sponsors. Today's program is sponsored by the First Church of Christ Scientist in Mill Valley. They want to invite you to join their church Wednesday evenings and on Sundays at 10. But mostly they want to invite you to two additional things. If you see a Christian Science reading room, if you find this kind of thought process interesting at all, if you're a seeker and you've recognized that you want to know more, you're welcome to wander into a reading room. They'll offer to help you, or they'll leave you completely alone if that's what you want to do, and you can wander through it. And they invite you to explore on spirituality.com to explore more of this thinking. We don't insist that you follow any particular church or thought, but we bring this to you so that if you recognize it matches with your thought process, it's one more resource that's accessible to you that you can make use of. So Dave, this is Dave Hohle, and we were talking about prayer and the feeling you get when you know you sort of like got yourself all the way out of the mortal mind and back into a whole awareness that it's not that just God created us in God's own image, but that God maintains that image and we can return to it.
Yeah, that's great, Scott. And you know, what you said about the reading room there during the break, nobody's trying to convince anybody of anything. This is all really just coming into the truth on your own and understanding your own connection to truth. Talk about prayer. There was a practitioner, a Christian Science practitioner, a long time ago, and asked me, did I know how to pray? And I said, I don't really think I do, actually. And she said, you pray like a little six-year-old would pray. And I thought, yeah. I said, that I can do. And I think what we can understand is that there's no complexity to this. This is a yielding to divine mind. This is an accepting. Mary Baker Eddy calls it a surrender to God, a joyful adoption of good, a childlike trust, she calls it. And then there's some pieces like self-abnegation, which means put some other interests ahead of your own. Put the better interests of the day ahead of your own interests. I've had a bunch of experiences where I've had to, you know, do things I didn't actually even really want to do, but it seemed like the right thing. It seemed like maybe a valuable plan than my own, and so I've yielded to that. And I think that you're not just wishy-washy. You're not just going to blow whatever way the wind blows. It's not that, but it's yielding to God, really. It's yielding to God as mind. Now, one thing, let's just define the term here a little bit, because there are a lot of atheists who don't believe in God. And to tell you the truth, I probably don't believe in that God either. The God they don't believe in, I'm sure I don't believe in.
But that was beautifully said.
Well, the way I've kind of understood God, and it's defined again in Science and Health, and you can find it. There's a glossary of terms there, one of which is God. She defines it in some very simple, she calls them primitive terms. She says there's not one derivative among these terms. She defines God as principle. Well, I believe in principle. I believe there is such a thing as principle that is constantly true, like 2 + 2 = 4. You go anywhere in the world. You go behind the moon. 2 + 2 = 4 is principle. There's love. I believe there's love. I've seen it. I've felt it. the mother love, the love, the brother, the love of a brother, the love of a sister, the love between people. You see it on the street. You see it in the subway. There's truth. She calls it truth. So there's principle, love, truth. Well, I believe there is such a thing as truth. You know, it's not just what you think and what I think. There's things that are true. And truth is eternal. And Mary Baker Eddy has given truth as a synonymous term for God. Principle, life. I believe there's life. I look at it all around. I'm looking at some trees out my office window here that are bursting with life. It's just brand new here in Chicago. And I believe that life is reflected all around us. Love, truth, life, principle, soul. I'm just getting a better understanding of what soul really is. It's you know what? You asked about prayer, and how do you know it? I think it's a quality of soul to know it, to understand it. It's like, it's beyond a gut feeling, but it's kind of on that level where you feel it. You feel and know. Mary Baker Eddy says we must feel and know. So anyway, there are seven of these synonyms: principle, life, truth, love, soul, and spirit, and mind. I believe there's intelligence, right? You and I are having an intelligent conversation here.
Mm-hmm.
Intelligence is a reflection of mind, divine mind. And Mary Baker Eddy has given that word as a synonym for God. So I don't believe in a God floating around the sky somewhere in white robes. I do believe in mind, intelligence, love. I believe in those primitive concepts, and I've been able to prove that those are true. One other thing, though. Substance seems to be matter, but real substance is spirit. Like, if you give me, let's say you give me a great gift, a beautiful, generous gift. It looks like you've given me the gift. Let's call it a silver bowl. And now I have the silver bowl. But the real gift is what you are bringing to me. It's what you have shared with me. It's not the bowl. The bowl's a representative of it. It's the substance. The substance is spiritual. Real substance is spiritual. So anyway, now as far as prayer, though, it's acknowledging, maybe it's yielding to, it's kind of calling on that spiritual truth, that spiritual reality. And you ever heard of Buckminster Fuller?
Of course.
Yeah, Bucky Fuller, right? He invented the geodesic dome and some different things. My understanding of him is that he was bankrupt and suicidal at age 35. He had failed at everything. And he was going to throw himself into Lake Michigan. I believe it was right here in Chicago or Evanston here, and kind of put an end to it. And if you Google this, you can read the story. But it came to him that the universe owns you, and the universe might have a purpose for you. And if you will yield yourself to that universe, I don't know if he used the word God or not, but he called it the universe. If the universe, if you will yield yourself to whatever that principle is, whatever the universe is trying to accomplish, and try to help that happen, things might go better for you. Now, I know a guy who was in the audience where he was speaking maybe six, seven decades later, maybe five, six decades later, and he said, from the moment I made that decision, I never lacked money again. So it's kind of like things flow when we get ourselves kind of in line, you might say, with divine principle, things flow from that. Good flows from it. And it blesses you. It blesses everybody. Look at what Buckminster Fuller did.
Mm-hmm. I love that. There's a phrase here that I've seen you use, and I really like it a lot. Time measures matter, but divine mind or spiritual consciousness is immeasurable and infinite. So we're talking about stepping in and out of time, because obviously we have our experiences in time, but our spirit or our spiritual consciousness is certainly timeless or beyond time. So time measures matter. Let's talk a little more about that matter stuff.
Yeah, it's once again, to quote a line from Science and Health, she says, I believe she says, Mary Baker Eddy says, the material universe is and must continue to be an enigma. And in matter, which everybody's trying like crazy to measure, in physics, for instance, you have the speed of light in a vacuum, and that's considered the fastest speed in the universe. Mm-hmm. And yet, they observe things that happen faster. They've observed them for many decades, and they've written a lot of like workarounds to try to explain how that's possible. How is it possible that matter moves faster than the speed of light would allow, faster than it's physically possible? And they've come up with a bunch of theories. Special relativity is a theory that tries to explain that. Einstein ended up calling it spooky action at a distance. It is and it must continue to be an enigma.
Perfect.
Now, the Bible says, look away from the body. Now, what does the Bible say? It says, be absent from the body and present with the Lord. And if we can find a way to kind of discipline our thought to kind of be present with the divine, to be present with the spiritual substance, like rather than getting caught up in the silver bowl, understand the real substance behind the gift.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a phrase that's called spiritualized thought. Spiritualize everything. Like an automobile, you might say, well, that's a shiny metal and glass and plastic and rubber conveyance machine. Or you could say, no, that's a collection of ideas. It definitely includes activity and motion and movement. It includes beauty. It includes design. It includes safety, comfort. It includes kind of a sense of freedom, privacy. There's a lot of sort of spiritual qualities associated with an automobile or a motorcycle, for that matter. By the way, speaking about motorcycles, which I've ridden a lot, you know, I've ridden way more than 100,000 miles on a motorcycle. And people have asked me, how do you stay safe? And I told them, the way I've thought about this is, if you're going to think, or if I'm going to think of myself as a couple of 100 pounds of flesh sitting upon 500 pounds of metal, I don't know how to keep that safe. But if I'm going to think of myself as a spiritual idea operating with safety and freedom and comfort and curiosity and intelligence, oh, and by the way, principle. But because in principle, there is no accident. There is no accident in principle. All is harmony. So if you can operate in a spiritual context, you're going to operate safely. One other thought. I had a dog, or I still have a dog, and she got away from me one time. I live here in Chicago, and we were at rush hour one morning, and she didn't get away from me. I let her go, and it was my mistake. But she ran across, chasing a bunny, across five lanes of traffic. And I was watching this from a distance, because all my voice command stuff had failed. As that happened, I was thinking, if only that bunny would stop. But the bunny didn't stop. The bunny went across the road. And then I thought, well, if only the dog would stop. The dog didn't stop. So I thought, the dog's safety is a spiritual quality that is with that dog wherever she is. And I kept that... I kind of just kept that alive and kept that in my thought. And the next thing you know, I was clipping the leash back on the dog and saying, I'm sorry, my friend, you can't do that here in the city. You can't do that. So intelligence is required. And I don't let the dog go free now. I just don't. Because it's incumbent upon me to express intelligence. Principle and mind are one thing. Mind is a synonym for principle. So you have to operate according to the law and according to intelligence, and then you can count on that. Principle will uphold you if you uphold principle.
Nice. If I look at myself as a never-ending spiritual being in a metaphysical universe far beyond time, yet I'm still interacting with a body experience in a whole never-ending series of nows, how do I get from now to forever?
Yeah, it's a cool point. It's a cool point. I've done some thinking about that.
Yeah, I can tell.
People say live in the now and all that. And I think it's a good thing, actually. But I think people define now as one moment in this sequence of nows. And it's a narrow moment between all those past nows and all those future nows. And it's this sort of limited little sliver. My thought on it, as I've thought about it, as I've kind of developed my thinking about it, is that you are actually in this very generous place called now. And it gets more generous as you live in it. It is unlimited. It is not squeezed, and it has nothing to worry about the future. It's just all right now. Now, I think what's kind of behind the question is, how do you live spiritually in a human situation? Which includes, you know, clocks and calendars and all that stuff.
Uh-huh.
And a lot of universally held beliefs about life, that you're going to get to a certain age and then this is going to happen and then this is going to happen. A lot of people believe that. Mm-hmm. It becomes a reality that's just kind of waiting to happen. It's just unfolding. But we talked about that early on with the cold.
Yes.
The cold is going to have a sequence. And if I accept the whole premise, then I'm going to have the whole sequence. But if you interrupt that whole premise that you're mortal, then you've basically tossed out the whole sequence, the whole birth, death. By the way, Jesus blew that all out of the water at both ends, the birth part and the death part. He did. He came into the world in an absolutely unique way, and he left the world in an absolutely unique way. And he's here. You know, Jesus said, "That which he that believeth on me, that which I've done, shall he do also, and greater works than these shall he do." Jesus knew that he was a unique character, but not without precedent, really, and not without antecedent, not without us. We're coming along, standing on the shoulders of other great thinkers throughout time, really, throughout eternity, let's say, throughout eternity. And Jesus was kind of just a perfect example, but he's not the only example, and he certainly shouldn't be the only example going forward. I would think that Jesus would want us to follow the example that he set, rather than sit and worship him and say what a great guy he was.
I've noticed that, and I want to jump back to it because you just shot right through it, and it's one of my favorite quotes, but I noticed that it never showed up. I grew up in a Presbyterian church, and I noticed that it never showed up in any of my Bible study classes as a kid. What you just said was, all these things I do, greater shall ye, all these things I do, you shall do, and greater things shall ye do in the name of God our Father, I think is how I remember hearing it. Let's just give people, if they want to go double check to see if that's really in the book, that's in it. Am I recalling correctly? That's in Matthew, I think?
You may be right. I couldn't.
Oh, cool. We're both stumbling around. Okay.
No, we're not stumbling around. I'm going to find it for you because I've got it right in front of me.
Ah, cool. Thanks.
Let me just pop this up.
As you look, I'll remind people, this is Spiritual Perspectives, and we're talking with Dave Holey, which is spelled H-O-H-L-E. You can find Dave's website at daveholey, daveholey.com.
Okay. In the Bible, in the book of John.
Ah, dang.
In the book of John, it says, "Verily, verily, I say unto you," this is the King James Bible, he that believeth on me, the works that I do shall he do also, and greater works than these shall he do, because I go unto my Father. So my sense of it is he was sort of saying, do these things. He was called the way shower, not the, you know, the one and only. He's called the way shower.
Right.
And I think that we are therefore sort of the implicit direction there is to follow, if we can, to follow in some degree the works and the discipline, the self-discipline of this guy. I think we should try to emulate that to some degree, to the degree possible.
So if time is not a factor, Dave, how do I bridge the two things together between all of the notions I've been imbued with, that I get X number of ticks on the clock and X number of beats in my heart, and that I've got X number of projects to do before Mickey's big hand points at the 12th? How do I integrate my infiniteness with my watch?
Okay. And I think that's a very, you know, very valuable intention, because if we are all just sort of sitting in a monastery somewhere knowing the truth, Jesus was out in the world.
Right.
Jesus was out in the marketplace. And when they brought him that woman who had been taken in adultery, my hunch is she would have been dead that day had he not been there. And he was there. I think they would have stoned her to death. That's what they intended to do. And I think he happened to be present and happened to interrupt it, really. And he did it in the most modest way. He didn't even, you know, he didn't tell him what to do. He said, you know, if you guys have no sin, why don't you, you know, go ahead.
Yep.
And
go
then
for it.
And their own conscience, he allowed their own conscience to kick in. Now, one of the things they say about God is that God and science are irreconcilable. Mary Baker Eddy said something different. She said reason and revelation are reconciled. Reason and revelation are reconciled. There's just one truth, and it's divine truth. There's just one life, and it's spiritual life. There's just one reality, and it's spiritual reality. But we express it humanly. And the best way that I could suggest is that your human experience and mine can be completely reconciled to our divine life, the divine life that's our life, and that we can express that divinity humanly as Jesus did. Mary Baker Eddy says the divinity of the Christ was made manifest in the humanity of Jesus. Well, the divinity of Scout or the divinity of Dave can be made manifest in the humanity of Scout and Dave. We have these human experiences. You, for instance, have an opportunity to speak to a large audience. That's quite a beautiful gift that God has given you, and you're using it, you know, responsibly and intelligently. So I think even this little radio program that you and I have just participated in is an example of divinity reaching humanity. And your listeners will hear, and they may hear something that they've never thought of before, and it may bless them in some way, might change their lives in some way. So I think what we're doing is an example of the question that you asked, how to do it.
Sweet. Now I've got to jump all the way back in time to the beginning of our interview. I've got notes here that you wrote that says, when I was 5 or 6 years old, my mom told me that if I ever got in real trouble, I could reach out to God and God would help me. Not long after that, I found myself midair falling backwards. In that moment, I remembered my mom's promise and reached out to God. An idea came to me that brought that moment of terror to a harmless close and opened for me a lifelong knowledge that I could really trust God in any situation. Okay, Dave, I'm calling you out. What happened?
Okay, I'll tell you what happened. I'm glad you asked. I climbed up on top of this dresser, and I threw a pillow up there. I was a little kid, and I was going to call my brother into the room and come down on him with this pillow, rain terror from above.
What a great plan.
Yes, a great plan. I climbed up there, And as I was kind of getting situated, I fell, and I saw myself fall backwards, which is a terrifying thing, even for a little kid. And I realized I'm in real trouble here. And then I remembered my mom told me I could reach out to God. And so I did. I said, God, you got to help me. And the idea came to me to interlock my fingers, like cup my hands and interlock the fingers, and put that little bundle of hands behind my head. So as I was falling, I got these interlocked fingers behind my head. And as I fell, my hands caught a doorknob that was there. And then my feet came down flat on the floor, and it was over. Now, I didn't know there was a doorknob there. God knows where the doorknobs are. God knows how to reveal in midair to a little kid what will save him and make him safe. And I've always thought about that. I thought, you know, if you gave that to a bunch of NASA scientists and said, here's the deal. We're going to drop a 40-pound kid backwards, and we want you to save his life. They might have come up with that same scenario. But I think it's interesting that it was revealed to a five-year-old midair.
Yeah. And once again, we're talking about stretching time.
Yeah,
in those
that's
moments,
another moment. Yeah.
In those moments, yeah. We suddenly have more time. Dave, this has been an absolute delight. It's just gone faster than I can believe. Let me reintroduce you to everybody. This is Dave Hohle, spelled H-O-H-L-E. You can find a lot more about him at his website, Dave Hohle, D-A-V-E-H-O-L-E, excuse me, H-O-H-L-E.com. It's been an absolute privilege to chat with you, Dave. I really appreciate it.
I feel the same, Scott. Thanks for having me.
You're so welcome. And I want to remind everybody, this is Spiritual Perspectives. My name is Scout like Pathfinder, Bartlett like Pears. We invite you to our website, www.ifidknownthen.com. There's a whole set of Spiritual Perspective programs archived there that you can listen to for hours. Meantime, let me ask every one of you two favors. One, treat yourself as a loved one, because you truly are. And no matter where on earth you are, it's a perfect day to have a great day on purpose.